Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
What is something from your search history?
So related, all of it was Star Wars terms that I was spell checking, except for who is that defense attorney on SVU? I don't know why I thought Google would know which one I was talking about, but I've been mainlining Law and Order SVU for the past 2-ish weeks to the point where I will watch anywhere between 4 and 10 episodes a day. I can't get enough.
Wow.
I know, I'd never really seen it. I thought I didn't like violence. Apparently I do, only when Mariska Hargitay is there. It's basically like my new personality, hobby, and job all in one.
Damn. Yeah. So are you late to the SVU part? I feel like SVU is have you always been messing with SVU?
No, I'm literally 500 episodes late. I don't know what happened.
Wow. Yeah. Because I feel like it's interesting to hear people like, I'm just getting into SVU. Where most people are like, man, SVU has been my number one forever that I don't talk about. But
I know.
Yeah.
I think part of it might be because lately when you binge watch a show, if they dump the whole thing at once, you know, you spend a Saturday night and then it's over. This never ends. It's bottomless. Right. And I just keep going and going and going. And I'm still like seasons away. It's still in the modern era of it where there's just I can't stop consuming it.
Have you been to the immersive SVU experience at Six Flags?
I honestly don't know if that's a joke or not. If it's real, I'm going to.
No, it's true.
Part of me was like, is it a walkthrough?
Right.
Fuck. Yeah, I could see that actually. Scene. Like a crime scene. Yeah.
I just want to go in their office.
Right.
Yeah. It feels like an installation you'd have at like a Halloween Horror Nights or something where it's like, oh, do a crime scene with the people at SVU or like CSI or some shit like that. But no, guess not.
Oh, I wish. Oh, how I wish.
I also love though, too. I mean, I've watched it here and there, but never, you know, to the point where, you know, they're definitely fans of the show. But I also like the idea of, you know, when you get into a show, you're like, I like this show. And you're like, there's only three seasons. Whereas you're looking at it, you're like, there's hundreds of episodes that I've yet to even begun to experience. So let this, long may it last for you.
Thank you. I know there's definitely some deep-seated psychological reason where I'm like, it'll never run out. It'll never abandon me like my other favorite shows. But at least for now, I just love it because in every episode, there's about 30 seconds where they reference being actual people that exist in New York City. Well, they'll like get a coffee at a coffee cart, or they'll be like, come on, we'll go make dinner. And I think I'm just living for that. Like the moments in my brain that I can piece together to make some sort of SVU sitcom. I think that's really where the joy lies.
You're like, that's the best part of the show.
Yeah.
I have some SVU slash fic that I can send your way. It's all just about them living very boring, ordinary lives in between the crimes. It's like,
that's kind of what I want.
They're like roommates. They have a lot. They could be talking about the most interesting stuff when they get home. Yeah. Like, what happened at work today? And they're just like, nothing.
Yeah.
Like, you want to watch Lost or something? They're like, yeah, okay.
It's called SVU Days Off. And it's just their days off, going to the Met. They're like, actually, if you treat New York like you're a tourist in your own town, it's really nice.
We should try that Halal Guys cart, huh?
What is something you think is overrated, Anna?
This is a little dark because of what happened recently in the news, but I'm going to say it because I do think it's true. I think music festivals are very overrated. Mm. And I say that because I went to Outside Lands in San Francisco over Halloween. Mm. And there were all these amazing acts, you know, like The Strokes, Tyler, Glass Animals, Nelly was randomly there. Lizzo was the headliner. And on paper, that's really cool. It's like, yeah, I want to go see all those artists. But the shows suck. Because, and man, I feel like I figured out the scam and I'm pissed. So like Glass Animals goes on to perform at 6 p.m. And I'm like, this music is pretty soft. And everyone is watching Glass Animals because they're really popular right now.
Yeah.
So the whole, like all 50,000 people in this park or however many it is are crowded just to see fucking Glass Animals while some poor acoustic singer is on the other stage that no one cares about. And You couldn't hear the music. And that music is meant to like encircle you.
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, Lizzo goes on at 8 p.m. and the music is blasting all through the park. So they have the capability to turn up this music. So you don't have to squish yourself to the front. They could just turn it louder so people could fucking space out, but they don't. And that is a scam. And I am not okay with it. And so because of that, I ended up not going to see a lot of these artists because I was like, I don't want to deal with the crowd and whatever. And I missed Nelly, which was maybe the whole point of going to see Nelly.
Oh, man. I guess they didn't hear a lot about him being in the news much recently. But hey,
you always have to find
a lineup somewhere.
We let our nostalgia dictate.
Yeah. I'm curious. In your mind, is this a conspiracy? Like you're saying, like they're turning Glass Animals down because maybe they're trying to help another. Like I'm trying to pull up the set time to see like who was playing when Glass Animals was playing. Because
it was like the organizer's daughter was on acoustic guitar.
Yeah, like in the like circus tent. But like, yeah, because I really love Outside Lands actually as a festival. I was just talking about that because we had a guest who was just there. But I like it because of the music festivals. It's like the most space and the most bathrooms and the most like and more of like the things that like trouble me about a festival is like I got to hold my pee in for 9 hours because like the lines are too long and then you can't get a good spot. Whereas there you can be pretty like leisurely, but I'm sticking
more
to your point.
You're proving my point. Yeah, that I went to the best of the best. The most space, the most bathrooms. They had a whole weed space where you go and buy weed and smoke it there. Yeah. And still, it fucking sucked.
Oh.
And I was so tired and I tried so hard and everyone was so drunk and college age and I have never in my life felt older.
Right.
But let me tell you something. Look, it may be a scam, but I cracked the code. So they had this like club in a tent and the line was like 3 hours long. That's another thing. What? You spend 3 hours at a music festival in a fucking line? Give me a break. But so I was like, I'm never getting into that. But I went during Nelly, and it was the only time that that tent was empty and you could go right in. So that was the price get into that stupid EDM tent.
Everybody who was playing, man, fuck, that was a lineup on that day. Krungbin went on before Glass Animals, and then K-Tronada was after Glass Animals.
Yeah.
And then that led into Tyler, or you could have caught Sango at the house by... I'm trying to find a conspiracy here, but it's a lot of heavy hitters. So.
But it's too much.
You should know that Miles is sponsored by Outside Lands. So you're going to get anytime
And I hope you got that VIP ticket, because actually the savings in time alone make it worth the extra $400. Now, you know, I'm just a fan, but shout out to Ranger Dave.
I think that's absolutely true about music festivals, based on my experience of going to Coachella once, was that it was just like a total crapshoot, and probably the most disappointing live music experience I've ever had was seeing Outkast live for the first time, their first like reunion show on that
run. 2014?
Yeah.
I was there.
You were there first week or second week?
Second week, because I was, my strategy is always to buy second week tickets, because everyone wants the first week tickets, or back, you know, when I used to go.
First week, the sound was all fucked up for the Outkast show. Like, you really, and then, like, I think Andre started getting sort of assuming that the audience just wasn't into them, and like, so he started like kind of yelling at the audience, but it was just the sound fucking sucked. It was so bad, like, for their show. They just hadn't like dialed it in, and
it's really tough. It's a tough thing for an artist, because unless you're the headliner and they blast that music and have it all figured out for your set, plus you get the setup on stage, like Tyler was in a fucking boat on stage, that was really cool. But unless you have that, it is a lot of space to fill up with your like presence. And 070 Shake, who I love, went up, and I guess she goes by 070 Shake, which I didn't know until I saw that show, but put on a great show. But it's like this big ass stage, and it was at the very beginning of the festival, day one, so not a lot of people were there. And she did the same thing where she was kind of yelling at the audience, like, come on, be excited.
Right.
And you just saw everyone just like not into it. And I was like, fuck this place. I'm going to go smoke some weed in Grasslands.
There you go. Maybe they'll turn the volume up.
I know.
Same stage, Kid Cudi, like at like 1 in the afternoon, was fucking incredible. It was a total crapshoot, you know. They just like knew.
It is.
And also he was out of his mind on, I think, the same drugs that the audience was on, so it worked out pretty well.
That's perfect.
The scam, I think, I think what's the benefit is, like, I like the idea of like spending an entire like multiple days seeing just great live music. But I think that's where things get a little muddied, where like you run into the things that, you know, like would plague any sort of profit driven operation, which is like they spent more money and like made it very comfortable for everyone. It would be such a great experience. But like, really, it feels like the guiding principle for a music festival is, how many fucking sweaty kids can we cram into this parking lot?
Yeah.
Right.
And still pay the artists what they need, and still for us make the money that we need to make as the organizers.
Yes. But, and that kind of leads into the Astroworld thing, where it's like, that was just too many people with too few strategies for how to control
that many people in one place.
Or none at all. Yeah.
What is something you think is underrated?
Okay. So I bought a book when I was out of town, and I read it in one sitting, even though I brought like 8 books.
Whoa.
But so this book is so fucking underrated, because I want everyone to read it and talk to me about it. It's called Fashion Victims: The Dangers of Dress, Past and Present, by Allison Matthews David. Allison, I'm going to holler at you on Twitter. This book is good as hell. It is illustrated and about all the different like poisonous ways that we have made clothing and the way that it used to kill people. So in an interesting way, it is both about history and labor politics and like capitalism and fashion and crazy macabre deaths. Like ballerinas being set on fire by their outfits, no one giving a flying fuck. Girls that made like green fake flowers getting poisoned by the green. People making hats getting crazy from the hats.
Mad
you know,
hatters.
Yeah. But like forever, people are like publishing articles and being like, yo, these people are dying. And they're like, nah, it's cool. These hats are cool, though. Then there was a fashion where they killed whole-ass birds and put them on hats.
Mm.
A whole-ass taxidermied bird.
They literally
killed so many that a bunch of those songbirds went extinct.
Jesus Christ.
They just wanted them on a fucking hat. How insane.
I love it. So, and because was it the Mad Hatters? That's because they were using mercury, right?
Yeah, like, mercury. Some shit like that. They loved to throw some mercury on some shit back
this
in the
wasn't
day,
even
man.
That. It's like tanning solution.
Oh, okay.
That.
Oh, so but, not I as mean, like the Mad as a, because Mad as a Hatter was like, that's like from the UK, right? Of like.
No, this is those... all the same thing, but I think.
Oh, the got solutions it. But in this, the story changed. Was about the. Got it.
The solutions changed, but stayed poisonous.
Peak mercury use.
Oh, and then shoe polish, like people would polish their shoes, go out dancing all night, come home and die because the shoe polish seeped through their shoes when they were sweaty and poisoned them.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, we need more deregulation.
So good. And they have pictures of all the stuff that has killed you. And they're still testing all of these hats. And they're like, yep, that still tests positive for mercury. Like it's been so many fucking years and the hat will test so positive for mercury it's enough to kill like a ton of people and they're like you should just wear it and that's it.
Are the illustrations scattered throughout the book, like when a subject comes up there's a picture there, or is it the like standard adult book thing where there's just like a center fold of a bunch of pictures?
No, they're all throughout. And
see, that's
it's
fuck,
so
I'm
perfect, and all the references that. For all of them are in there. It's like meticulously researched. So when they're like, this is the kind of green hat that killed people, there'll be a picture of the green hat, and they'll also do a thing where like, this is an advertisement from that time that is like a cartoon that shows that kind of green hat or people dying from the green hat. It's
right.
It's pretty fire.
The ad's like, those people are liars. Our green hats didn't kill no kids.
100%. That is how ads were.
Like slandering people who are
living. And
this
a lot
woman's
of them,
a liar. Buy green hats.
And a lot of them blamed the people wearing the clothes. They were like, you're of a course. Dumb bitch. And that's right. Why you died from setting yourself on fire.
User error.
Oh, so you
sorry.
Didn't know it was. Yeah. You didn't know your shit was soaked in kerosene to make it that nice texture. That's on you.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right, Miles. Like the mercury thing is a big part of it. I just want to say that there's so many more terrible things.
Oh, right. So many different levels. Yeah. It wasn't just the mercury, though.
And then Max would be like, come to bed. And I'm like, no, hold on. I have to read about these poisons real quick. I got to get back to these leaders.
Take that hat off.
It's just a baseball hat.
I said off. It's green.
Well, it's pretty creepy because apparently a lot of the green dye is still toxic.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that you, when you're reading, the author is like, and actually, this is still real dangerous. Right. And we don't know where most of the cheap clothes that you buy come from or who made them or dyed them. So actually, you could be wearing something that poisons you. Have a great day.
Wow.
I just want to tag on an underrated of illustrations in adult books, like not just a bunch of pictures in the middle, but like give me some illustrations throughout the publishing industry. You know, they need to like find a happy medium between adult books and children's books.
I think that's why I read a lot of historical books, because like cartographic images and like certain portraits are in there, because they're like, you got to understand like what you're looking at here, or like how close this city is to this city. And I think part of me is like, yes, maps and pictures.
Also, I feel like, don't you feel like it's a treat when you get to it?
Yeah.
And I don't want the treats to just be all in a big ass pile randomly.
Right.
I want it to be distributed. So I'm getting a little treat all the time.
Well, yeah.
Otherwise, and also sometimes it ruins it for you. If they put all of the pictures earlier, sometimes you'll see a picture and it'll be like, oh, it's her dead husband. You're like, he fucking died. I didn't even get to that part yet. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, that's very true. Also, just on the mercury thing, they liked mercury so much that the way that we
liked it so much.
They liked it so much that they used to stick it up their ass when they had incontinence, or rather constipation. And that's how we've been able to reconstruct Lewis and Clark's journey, is because one of them was constipated and sticking mercury up their ass. So you just like go along and find the latrines shits that have mercury in them. And that's where they stop.
I'll do you one better. You shove it in your dick hole.
Thank
to
you.
Treat yourself from syphilis. So
is that true?
Yes. And wow, that is what they were doing. And that is apparently one of the like myths or like theories for how they discovered that mercury helps the tanning process, that like a dude was pissing in the tanks because urine like does stuff. And because he was getting
marking it up,
treated for syphilis, that his process like worked a lot better than other people's. So they deduced it. That's like one theory.
They're like, damn, yeah.
John's dirty dick is making good ass.
It's like, holy shit, man. Have you tried Reggie's new coats? Man, like, it's so soft. What's your secret, man? I got syphilis. What?
Yeah, what I'm slowly going insane.
Okay, thanks.
And it's probably just because like it looked cool, right? It looks like liquid silk. Like, it looks like the T-1000 from like Terminator 2. So like they were just like, well, that shit must like be good for something. Let's keep it around and try it and rub it on everything.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about the news.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back. And like we said up top, America still a white supremacist, violent shitscape. You know, we had a sense that Rittenhouse was going to be found not guilty, but it doesn't feel
based on
like
years of just observing the American legal system, sadly.
Yeah, but it didn't feel any less like a, you know, sickening gut punch to hear them read not guilty five times as this little pig-faced Nazi youth sits there and like pretends to faint. But yeah, I mean, these are American values. Like, if you needed any evidence that we should be fighting to teach critical race theory as hard as they're fighting against it, like, here you go. Mm-hmm. American police started as a slave patrol, but you don't need to see that they have roots in white supremacist vigilante violence because we still allow white supremacist vigilantes to just like police and ultimately murder people in the interest of that ideology. So,
yeah. I mean, this is, you know, this is a turning point for sure, because you're now, we've legally essentially set a precedent that you can bring a weapon with you in a situation where you're there to like protect whatever, but
property, even protect
if,
property.
Yeah. Even if you cause a commotion by being armed, you are then now, it's legal for you to defend yourself, even though you've come with provocation in mind.
Right.
And I think that's going to create a huge chilling factor for people when they want to go protest. Some people think it's something people will have to consider now when they're in the streets protesting, because now you have said, you know, legally, yeah, if you feel scared enough, then go ahead, start clapping, and, you know, maybe you'll get off based on the complexion of your skin. And, you know, there's a lot of things we're seeing too. This is now sort of like more and more you're moving into that phase where the right wing violence is now sort of blending more and more with law enforcement and sort of not understanding where the lines are with who is going to enforce what anymore, because we're damn sure seeing what the police will turn their head and look away from and allow to happen. But we're now like fully, it seems like more and more we're going to be seeing this, you know, connection between the police and sort of outsourcing the violence to these other people now, because it used to be the police that were sort of the ones on the front sort of brutalizing protesters, but vigilantes can now act as their agents.
Yeah. He was pictured with a bunch of Nazis, like giving the thumbs up and celebrating in between, like when he was leading up to trial. Black Rifle Coffee was like, we're not associated with him. Black Rifle Coffee, which is itself like a right wing gun coffee company.
Yeah.
Was like, hey, don't be wearing our, we didn't give him any of that shit. Don't mind us. But, you know, a lot of people are rightly pointing to the contrast between how the police treat unarmed black children versus how they treated a armed with an assault rifle white kid who had just murdered two people. Another instructive comparison is the story of the Not Fucking Around Coalition, which is an armed group that is dedicated to protecting black lives from police brutality. Just the idea of arming black citizens who, by the way, have way more reason to need to be armed for like self-defense and preservation of life than Kyle Rittenhouse, who was avowedly there to protect property. He was there to protect like looting or whatever the fucking,
yeah, inanimate, you know, objects.
Yeah, whatever their fantasy is. But they, you know, since kind of coming together during the Black Lives Matter movement of 2020, the Not Fucking Around Coalition has been targeted as an extremist group. Their leader has been arrested and charged with pointing a gun at police, for which he faces 3 to 27 years in prison. He's currently not allowed to possess a gun or access social media while he awaits trial, because these are American values. This isn't like, that's what's so enraging about this, is that was the point. The point of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial was getting him to like be buddy buddy with the judge, so everybody could see that, to see like, no, this is what we condone, and like this other thing is what we don't condone.
More than that, I think the verdict, you know, because I see a lot, I mean, on the right, people are like, where's Black Lives Matter here at this thing? It's white people that got killed by Kyle Rittenhouse, and like, they're like, this is the thing you don't understand, that this person was there in service of white supremacy,
right?
And what this verdict is really saying, it's trying to erode solidarity, you know, because a lot of people began to understand, not enough, but many people in this country said, you know what? Yeah, this is bad. And I should actually stand, you know, with these people who are oppressed and use my privilege as a way to maybe try and change things, maybe better things. And I would like to be an ally to this movement. But what this is showing you too is it's showing that even for white people who are considering allyship, that your whiteness will not protect you if you are standing in direct opposition to white supremacy. Because at that point, your life is just as disposable as a person of colors. And for many people looking at this, it's just, I can only imagine what the subtext or how other people are reading into it. But from my perspective, it's clear to see that this is definitely made to also send a warning shot across people who are saying, you know what, if you're on that side, just so you know, it's the rules will be different.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, this legal system has done its job, because just like we said in 2020 that summer, right? White supremacy is a living organism that has to survive no matter what. It finds ways to survive. It's not just simply saying like, all right, we've legislated against it, it's over. Because the second there's mass public action that is kind of showing up and brewing against it, it's going to find these ways to reinforce the message that these public actions are not powerful enough to topple this. Because inherent to all of this is a legal system that is meant to justify and rationalize all of this violence, and using its perceived impartiality as a legal system, quote unquote, to again say, no, there's ways that we can make this work, especially if, like Kyle Rittenhouse, you're there in service of white supremacy or property rights or however somebody wants to spin it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, this is especially frustrating because it seems like, you know, at the moment, the defund the police movement has been losing popularity. They lost a big battle in Minneapolis where they voted to keep the existing police force. And as we talked about last month, there's sort of a mainstream narrative that is tying the rise in violent crime and murder to police defunding, even though nobody actually defunded the police to a degree that they were like crippled. And what happened is police budgets got minor cuts from absurd heights.
Well, they got three less bazookas than
right.
Normal.
And, you know, that kept them from being armed like Navy SEALs to police their communities. And the main thing that happened was the police basically quit on their communities for daring to criticize them. And I also think there's probably a breakdown in the public trust in police, as it's revealed that police are both, you know, continuing to be armed, willing to use deadly force, and extremely bad at their job. So I don't think that's helpful. But the solutions seem to be defund the police, which was interpreted by the mainstream media as like take the police away. Yeah, police gone forever. And
911 won't work anymore.
Yeah. And then double down on a system of militarized Foucault boomeranged police force that like is just basically occupying forces being in American cities and in neighborhoods that they don't live in, but that are in American cities and where they are willing to use deadly force. Like that's being treated as like, well, it's either no police or we keep doubling down on this fucking nightmare scenario. So I did just want to like take a second to like check in with what defunding the police could actually look like. A lot of people are treating it like it's a branding thing. And I don't know, like that's super frustrating.
It is. I mean, it's not that it's a branding thing, but people, Americans, again, because of the amount of propaganda we consume throughout our lifetimes, we're just still so invested in these cruel systems.
Right.
And we're at this point where we can acknowledge the cruelty of the systems, but not quite able to articulate the way past it or through it. You know, like everyone goes, damn, man, shit, this seems bad. Like even especially as it relates right now to like labor, right? Everyone's like, man, this is fucked up. Like people are just like, yeah, now that I think about it, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
But we're sort of, because there's so much other messaging that is going to, you know, keep away things like giving people the imagination on how to make something better for themselves, whether that's through collective bargaining or through because now people are organically withholding their labor. There's a difficulty in articulating to say, yes, this is fucked up. The thing we need to do is X.
Right.
we're just not, there's not enough Americans who are able to get to that part. Many people are just at the part who are like, yes, this is fucked up. You're right. This is fucked up. The police just, I'm actually just realized, yeah, it does seem like the police just go after people of color and they're not punished for it because we have things like qualified immunity. That's fucked up. Yeah. Now what? And I think the first thing that people that was brought to the table in terms of like the vocabulary to use was defund the police, because that was more acknowledging the fact, the injustice of what our law enforcement system is like, that this cannot, we cannot abide anymore. And because it was co-opted to just mean the end of all public safety, that immediately just put a chilling effect on things. And people were unable to, again, we need to be able to pivot to, yes, it's fucked up and we need to move towards this.
Yes.
And if we're always stuck at things are fucked up, it's very hard to begin organizing around certain things. And like you're saying, you have some people who are really talking about completely changing what it means to have like law enforcement and what public safety is and the people who can be involved or the specialties that we need for that. But I don't know. I feel like everything kind of keeps evolving in this way that it's just become very difficult to kind of escape, or not escape, but to keep telling people that it's not merely just saying the end of your safety.
Right.
It's that we have to actually, there are other ways to keep people safe. And on paper, the cops aren't doing a good job.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it has to be compounded by the fact, too, that lately it feels like every sphere of society is just fucked. Just everything. Especially that we're still in a pandemic. It doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon. I read something that there's another strain coming. Like, we're just in this. And you can't even count on someone to wear a mask to try not to actively kill you, to get a vaccine for the better of the community. It just seems like there's such a divide in such a deep, deep way that it really is. Everything that needs to change requires teamwork. And there's so many people who just don't give a shit that it feels like at times an impossible mountain to climb.
Yeah.
And I think, and that's by design too, you know, like I think to help people feel so, this sense of despair or like lack of control over anything can easily just put people into this new thing about saying, well, the solution isn't going to be how am I going to work with other people? The solution is fucking get your house in order and figure out how you're going to weather this without the help of anyone. Because I think that's the message that's reflected to people by society and the government at large, which is like, you're on your own, motherfucker.
Yeah,
ain't nobody
helping
you.
Yeah, I feel like that's exactly, like, rather than, you know, being like, well, if only these people would vote for like what is good for them. Like, I feel like that's where a lot of it ends, is like, these people are idiots. Like, I think a lot of the problems come from the fact that everybody in America is existing in a society where if you don't have enough money, that will let you die. Like, that's that's just like, it's a cruel, cold fucking world. And it's also, you know, we're being stripped of our humanity by capitalism and by just like being, you know, turned into values on a spreadsheet. And I think that's like been a long, slow process, and people are fucking beat down from it. So there's this Rice University article that kind of takes a look at where alternatives to policing should be focused. And the first category is health, you know, like mental health and drug abuse resources. The vast majority of patrol police, over 90% in Seattle, address multiple people in mental health crisis every month. Like, that is the main thing. Like, I was dropping my kids off at school on Friday morning, drove past someone who's clearly in having a mental health crisis. And my only recourse, like, was to call 911 basically, or like stop and do something about it myself, because I don't know what are the mental health like authorities. And if I call 911 for help, a person who is scared with a gun is going to show up. Like, that's what the police have the ability to do, is like use a gun.
Right.
So that's how they solve the fucking problem.
Yeah. And, you know, this is like everything that the police are there for. Again, they're there to clean up the failures of this capitalist system that we're in. We have mental health problems because we will not take care of people with mental health problems.
Right.
We will not take care of people who need interventions for their drug abuse or need to go into a treatment program. So we allow that to fester and it turns into someone on the street acting out and people go, oh my God, I can't, oh, this person is doing something. I got to call the police to get them away from me.
Right.
When really that's because we failed to take care of somebody. You look again, we talk about crimes of desperation, survival crime, like theft and shoplifting and shit like that. That's not because they're fucking Tony Soprano, because they just stole a bunch of Enfamil. That's not what the fuck is going on. It's because people have been failed. We have failed to take care of each other. We have failed to create or provide sustenance or the materials needed to survive. So people are left to their own devices and have to go out and survive. And that's where the police come in, because we've criminalized needing help. We've criminalized being vulnerable. We've criminalized being poor. And we've completely obscured this dynamic through this lens of law enforcement and the good guys and the bad guys and this binary that's all it is, rather than no. This is, most of us are being brutalized by the same people and for the same reasons, because we're not getting what we need to survive.
Yeah. I feel like, so one of the, you know, examples that we've talked about before on this show, the Rice University article talks about, is CAHOOTS, which is the cornily named Eugene, Oregon organization that started as just a thing to like help people who are having bad trips, essentially, and has developed into, you know, a very continually useful alternative to the police that can come and help somebody who is having a mental health crisis. And a lot of times their job is to just be a person who can do whatever is required at the time. You don't need like special training. It just seems like there's so many fucking jobs that could be created by supplementing the police with people who don't fucking murder people. Like how about we try that? Just create a police of people who actually live in the communities and are there to solve problems instead of like treat people like enemy combatants.
Right.
And, you know, there have been examples of this with people who are there to help with relationship crises, domestic violence, which, you know, a lot of times people who are engaging in domestic violence, you know, move on to other violent crimes. But it certainly doesn't help that the thing they're met with when they first engage with in domestic violence is somebody pointing a gun at them. And that's the only, it's either like funneled towards prison or like figure it out yourself. You know, no mental health resources, no relationship resources. And the other, just community patrol in America has traditionally been fucking Kyle Rittenhouse and George Zimmerman and people like that, where, you know, people, armed white people who are racist, thinking that they need to, you know, just basically playing police officer. And like that needs to be supplemented with some, you know, the Black Panthers were there to police the police and they were treated like a violent fucking extremist organization, which is all you need to know about the difference in how America approaches these things. But that's another option that is probably the least tested, but the one that absolutely needs to be pursued more than it has to this point.
Yeah. Just thinking about, you know, like the whole thing that by America being so intentionally cruel, and that's sort of like the sort of foundation that like life is built on, and keeping people, most people, you know, like in a place where they feel like, well, my only thing that I have is to survive, because I'm not looking at many things that will help me. Granted, there are social safety nets out there, but in general, the message is, if you don't have, then you will continue to lack and then you will expire. Yeah. And I think it helps always keep people divided because of that. Because if you're always acknowledging that you're in this survival situation, altruism doesn't make sense all the time, because you're already accepting that you're in a situation where surviving is number one. And if that's the case, it's, you know, for lack of a better metaphor, it's like looking like the Squid Game marbles episode where suddenly when it's time to survive, you'll do whatever the fuck you have to do. That's just human nature.
Yeah.
And And it's such a elegant way to continue to keep people from being able to group together, to organize together, because we're too busy fucking dealing with the chaos of like the cruel reality that we're in all the time.
Yeah. And I feel like the fact that there aren't all these jobs, like there, people recognize their communities are fucked. They recognize that like there is work to be done there. The fact that those jobs aren't created yet, I feel like is like a hangover from a previous time when people like didn't give a fuck about their communities. And, you know, I don't know, like it just feels like this is a problem that could be addressed if people just act locally. And
right.
Yeah, I don't know. There are the people, there is the will to do things to help.
I mean, most people are probably better at, I mean, I would say every person who lives in a neighborhood will be better at policing their neighborhood than the fucking police.
Yeah, that's
because
the thing with
where you live, you know who the fuck you live with. You know who's in your community. Say, oh, that person, no, don't worry about them. They're kind of going through it.
Yeah.
That's, I know them. There's more context to who this person is rather than a 911 call saying someone is acting belligerent and is, you know, threatening people with a shopping cart or something. Because, like you're saying, things aren't of our communities anymore.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I just think of how much, even like where I grew up, I knew so much about my neighborhood. I knew so much about people who I saw. I saw the same regular unhoused people all the time, to the point where like I knew what the fuck they were like. I knew what they were going to ask me for. I knew what their whole rap was. And you understand. You're at that point, you actually have a better idea of like what is a threat, what is a danger to you, your safety, or the community at large. But
right.
Anyway, maybe we'll begin to have a reckoning one day in America. But we've been reckoning free since fucking whenever you want to put a date to it.
Mm. Well, speaking about depressing, let's talk about inflation.
Uh-oh.
Mm.
So it's the buzzword of the season. It's been used to explain everything from the labor shortage to why turkeys are more expensive this year. And yeah, it's just a convenient, I mean, it's happening. First of all, it is happening. Things are getting more expensive. So the explanation that we're getting, though, is that it is all because of the labor class being paid more.
Yeah, that's one. If you follow so Stephanie Ruhle, or mm-hmm. if you're watching Tucker Carlson, it's just to be like, Joe Biden is trying to make you poor. Mm-hmm. At the other part of it, corporations are also kind of loving it too, but on a much more subtle level, because they're loving it because they're using this to actually just raise prices on people because they mm-hmm. can't, because they see people are paying for it very cynically. Nothing to do with stressed supply chains. They're just like, yo, let's see if we can squeeze out a couple percentage points. Because this is a very interesting statistic that was in the Wall Street Journal. Nearly 2 out of 3 of the biggest U.S. publicly traded companies had larger profit margins this year than they did in 2019. Okay. And that means nearly 100 of these massive corporations report profits in 2021 that are 50% above profit margins from 2019 pre-pandemic.
Jesus Christ. So
they're making money right now. And a lot of it is being revealed in this article in the New Republic. You know, people were sitting in on shareholder calls just to be like, I wonder how this is being messaged to the people that own the stock of some of these companies. And what they're hearing is things like, it's from this article, quote, in these calls, business leaders employ fancy financial lingo to tell large shareholders how they are engaging in, quote, pricing improvements and, quote, successful pricing strategies. They tell you they are experiencing customer, quote, elasticities to price increases at historically low levels. When you decode what they're saying, it's nothing less than a euphoric articulation that they're able to pass off price increases to consumers. Full stop. And there's like, on one hand, you'll have places like, and the stock prices are going up because of this. They're like loving. They're like, oh my God, wait, what? And you're making more profits. This is fantastic. You look at a company like Target, who had come out and said, you know, we're actually not going to be raising prices. Like, we're able to kind of maintain what we have and have like a healthy financial outlook by not raising prices. And shareholders started dumping their stock. and sending the stock price down. So people were like, well, I don't want to be on board with some company that's not going to raise their prices to make more money. Are you fucking dumb?
That's so sad.
Yeah.
So depressing.
And, you know, there's even on CNBC, Jim Cramer was talking about how like Home Depot and Lowe's, they're raising prices because they don't give a fuck. And also they're literally in a mentality of who going to stop me, boo? Like, who going to check me? Because the two of us run the whole shit. This is from Jim Cramer talking about how these two companies, Lowe's and Home Depot, can, quote, do no wrong because they're passing on rising costs to the public. And the public has no choice because these two chains have single-handedly wiped out the competition already.
So is what we're seeing, like the, you know, the pandemic caused the government to send out aid to people who had lost their jobs. More people had more like government assistance than they'd had in a long time. Is that where the quote unquote elasticity comes from? And like the government aid, those payments that were supposed to like help people get through a rainy day, like are just immediately getting like hoovered up by Walmart and like all those corporations? Like,
yeah. But you did have a lot of Benny's, you know, benefits run out and for certain people all over the country starting months ago. So even now, like just even when we talked about that one dumb CNN piece where they're like, my milk's $90 a gallon now, and it wasn't. But I think they really like this idea that prices, it's just like, that's the thing about this. There's a lot of nebulous data that is able to be sort of harnessed for the aims of, at this point, corporations. Because I think at the end of the day, more than like, obviously the wealth extraction from consumers is a huge thing for them. But more importantly, this is feeding this narrative about what it means with Biden in office and what he aims to do with some of these infrastructure, like with Build Back Better. A lot of that, like the financing from that is to be like, yeah, we just got to charge corporations like their fair share in taxes. That's how we pay for a lot of this shit. So this is helping them create a little more instability and uncertainty in consumers by raising their prices. So they make more money while also saying, hey, man, if Joe Biden is going to start passing all these other laws, inflation is going to be even wilder. Hold on to your whole butt and paycheck. And so that's also their aim at sort of being like, now we can kind of stoke an anti-infrastructure movement that will protect our tax rates.
Yeah.
Right. It's like inflation has always been politicized because it's what they were saying before the stimulus passed. That first stimulus, like, oh, we can't pass a stimulus package because it will spike inflation. And that's bad. And then all these economists were like, no, it's not really like that. Like, you're overblowing this risk.
Right.
Wow.
But I think that's where you see like sort of like the vested interests when we have debates like this of like, do we help people or do we raise corporate taxes? And there are many people who are just on the human ground level who are like, yes, please. That sounds great. Unfortunately, the messaging and the access to all the levers of like mainstream communication have vested interests in the same way. Be like, we're not paying more fucking taxes. Are you fucking kidding me? We're just going to talk about this inflation and start banging that drum and look the other way.
Yeah. There's also, just with regards to the supply chain, an explanation I actually heard on the It Could Happen Here Daily Show. They interviewed somebody who works at a like soda manufacturing plant and has like worked in various manufacturing jobs like over the past 4 or 5 years. They were talking about how the big change that's happened is that corporations have now embraced this thing called just-in-time production, which means that you don't start producing something until there's a demand for it. And like you don't it's like there's no you're not like storing anything, there's no overhead. It's just like, oh, okay, so they ran out of this and we're hearing they need more, now we produce it. And like that basically creates, it's cheaper for the companies, it gives them better margins because there's no overhead. And there's no like producing something that then doesn't get sold.
Right.
The problem is that there's no like elasticity in the supply chain. So like you don't have extras if suddenly there's a bunch of, you know, this person worked as a casket manufacturer in the past. So if there's suddenly a need for caskets, suddenly the way that they deal with that is they just worked people inhumanely around the clock until like they can get that supply met. It's once again just the values of the market, of quarterly earnings calls, of CEOs who have just extracted the humanity from the workers and from the laborers and turned it into just, you know, values on a spreadsheet. And, you know, that is what economics is. That's what the modern version of capitalism is. And like market logic is just like remove the humanity, think of everything as like
look at the numbers. Are the numbers good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not great. But again, it's just the overall system. It's the same overall system that we were talking about with regards to the inflation.
Right. And I mean, at a certain point, you know, like you're slowly seeing more and more people take up for themselves and organize themselves to have better outcomes for them, at, you know, for themselves yet again, to use that word, you know, as it relates to their employment and what benefits they get. And I can only see, I don't think just-in-time production habits are going to necessarily extinguish those flames. I feel like it's, I'm curious what they're looking at too. Like, because at this point, all the forecasting that happens, whether it's like risk they're worth taking because they'll say like, well, this thing's faulty and we might get sued, but we can afford it as long as we make enough money up front. Like what kind of stuff they're already looking at in terms of what the unrest will be like with their employees and how to navigate that and see like, well, we could scab it up for this time, just skate through Q4 and then call in the Pinkertons.
Well, the really insidious thing that he was talking about is that by making it such a like flexible system where you need to like move around and like, okay, I'm going to put this person on this job, it actually makes, like he was saying, that he's in a union shop, but the people who are in a non-union shop actually were in slightly better working conditions as of this moment because they had flexibility. But that's all because of the inhumane orders coming down. Like they're better able to deal with the inhumane orders coming down. So it's like the just-in-time production is creating a system where like it makes it harder for people who are unionized, which is fucking bullshit.
Right.
Yeah, that's it does feel like that's the trend, though. Like, I don't like it's harder to be unionized working for a corporation like Amazon. And I feel like Walmart was maybe the writing on the wall where it was like Walmart was union busting and people were trying to stop Walmarts from being built in their town. And now it's like, fuck it. We don't need stores in our towns. We can just have Amazon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, this is I mean, we're living in a very historic time. Especially as, like even more than ever, I can't, I just look at things and I'm like, how do these people with all, like who have all the capital really think that at a certain point, like that you can just run someone down to the point where they're like, okay, I'll just die on the factory floor.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and that does happen places. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, enough people are going to I'm just, it's always fascinating to see how disconnected those people can be from like what the actual reality is of the situation they're in.
It's fascinating, but the show Succession exists for a reason and it's beautiful, well-written TV. But I mean, it's like, you don't have exposure. That's our stratified society where you don't have exposure to the working class if you're in that corporate class.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're the poorest person you know is what? Greg?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you find his problems amusing, right?
Right. And you laugh about it.
And he's only poor because his grandpa doesn't want to give him his inheritance.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things that I've just been like, I'm continuing to think over is I'm reading that book, Debt by David Graeber, which is the history of, it's basically a new history of economic systems like throughout human history. Prior to this, most of my understanding of like how economics works was based on economists, you know, like people who study economics and like subscribe to the Adam Smith idea that like, well, everybody is a financial actor who is like acting in their own self-interest. And this book argues that like that is actually like that ideal of humans just acting in self-interest being like the most basic thing was like introduced by Hobbes and Leviathan, was seen as like super cynical at the time that it was introduced and like not an accurate description of humanity because we existed in like small communities that helped each other out. But within like 100 years, it was the default like assumption because it is so profitable. It's so it's so helpful to people to make money, and it's going to be assumed, and it like makes a sort of shrewd logic or a sort of shrewd sense, and it like feels like the sort of thing that's like tough and like realist, but it's actually not how humanity has been for the vast majority of our history as a species. For the majority of our history as a species, we've been, you know, that the idea that you would just extract as much value from humans as you possibly can is rightly seen as like
it's colonizing. It's the it's the foundation of colonizing.
Yeah. Oh, here's this group. I can push them around. Watch this. Yeah. Now they're making me money. Mm-hmm. Great. Move on to the next town of weaklings, and I'll rinse and repeat.
And to dehumanize in the process.
Right. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it Pop Biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
And we're back, and speaking of Texas, so Matthew McConaughey has not announced that he's going to run for governor yet. He has expressed interest. Mm-hmm. And so people are theoretically putting out some polls to be like, if this guy ran.
We love ourselves a hot, famous governor.
Hell
you know it. Ew. Who governor cares about pack. His policies? Let me see that ass.
Yeah.
Twerk for democracy.
He's not going to twerk, though. He won't twerk. That's where he draws the line.
Yeah.
That's not.
He'll just play the bongos naked.
That's yeah, exactly.
The butt bongos.
Yeah.
I would love that. They're all, you know, Beto O'Rourke, he announced, he's like, yo, I'm getting in the ring. And people are like, okay.
I was just born to run, man. What was the thing on the cover of Vanity Fair? I was just got to be in it, man. I was just born for this.
That one where he's like in the truck.
Yeah.
Like that with the failed, dog. Yeah, yeah. The failed Vanity Fair spread.
Cosplaying as a real American, folksy
Texan guy. But yeah, there's some, you know, they said, let's do some hypothetical head to heads. First, what if Beto O'Rourke and Matthew McConaughey went head to head? Who wins? 49%. 49% to Matt, 27% to Beto.
Oof.
Then they said, okay, so if he advances that round. What if it's the incumbent governor, Greg Abbott, running against the insurgent Matthew McConaughey in that hypothetical runoff based on this poll? And again, it's a very, you know, loose point, even know how they did it. But Abbott gets 35% of the vote. Matthew McConaughey gets 43% of the vote. He would be 8 points ahead.
All right.
And that's just that's a snapshot literally right now of probably people they just called on the phone and who knows how serious they were. But it is interesting to see that like when they put all three in a three-way race, but obviously that wouldn't happen because that's not how elections work.
No,
but
tell Matt, me more about this. Because Matt doesn't do three-way race. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could be like a jungle primary or something like that. But in this straightforward race, that in that instance, Abbott gets a plurality. So like because they would split the vote between Beto and Matt. But it also showed, but which is interesting because you're also like, oh, but it looks like some people would go to Matt though if it came down to Matt and Abbott. But this is just like such a
threesome's always better when you split the vote, if you know.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean, but why don't you explain it to the people?
Yeah.
I have tons of experience in threesomes, like obviously.
Yeah, I know how to rock the vote.
Jack, your mustache says that it has had a ton of three ways.
That mustache says ripping.
It does add some character to my face that is completely unearned.
It looks jizz soaked.
It could be. It could be jizz soaked. Look jizz soaked right now?
No.
I thought I cleaned it up.
No. That's right. Coffee mate, okay? It's coffee mate.
It's coffee mate, asshole.
I drink it straight out of the bottle.
I want to be in it, man. I'm just born to be in it. That was the quote on the cover of Vanity Fair that I...
Tell me how that's not about a threesome and wanting to be in it.
Oh, you're just outside of an orgy room?
Exactly.
They're like, hey, if you're not participating, no staring. Okay.
So yeah, as stupid as this is that he would possibly run, I would probably prefer him over Abbott, right? Abbott is
Yeah, you kind of have to. Abbott's kind of the worst. Yeah.
It's just another. It's like another American election special. You want the piece of shit or the person you're like, I'd rather not. Those are your two options.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, we've talked about some of the policies that he's articulated in the past. And, you know, he's very like. He's like, yeah, man, like
radical centrist.
Like, gotta have your abortions. You know, I definitely believe in that. gotta get a Bobo if you want one, and other than that, have your kids. I mean, if they want to get vaccinated, I'm gonna have to wait on that. That's right. Where he starts getting a little, you know, woo woo LA.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, we're edge of our seat.
I mean, and stranger things have happened. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger was our literal fucking governor. So.
What about the fucking wrestler, Jesse fucking Ventura?
Yeah.
Like, shit happens. You
he
know,
was
Americans,
the first one.
Americans love a fucking nonsensical celebrity like situation. We don't care what context it's in.
Right.
We're like, George Foreman sells grills. We're in.
We love it.
Like, we don't care what the crossover is, you know?
Yeah. It almost feels like McConaughey's too high profile to run for governor. You know what I mean? It's like, you could still be in movies. Like, the mother people, like, And not to say Schwarzenegger was very at his prime. But, like, in this day and age of celebrities running, I feel like we need to go, like, two levels below.
Right.
To see, like, you know, I don't know who that person would be. But,
yeah.
Like, Lil Flip.
Right.
I want it to be an all Lil ticket. Flip, Yachty, let's get it popping.
Nas X, you know what I mean?
Has a celebrity who's not kind of right-leaning ever won the it seems like they're very successful on the right. You got your Reagans, your Ronald Reagan, your Ventura, your Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. But like who is centrist and has won? Like neocons. I feel like neocons reject this idea because, or not neocons, neolibs reject this idea because they're all straight A students, like we talked about. So they like want to believe that, come on, man, this is serious business. You have to study economics.
Stick to the pot.
Right. Yeah. I just feel like this won't go as well. But the fact that he appeals to the right as well might make it work. But
right. And I mean, dude, Fred Thompson was also an actor. Al Franken.
Also, you know?
Franken. Yeah. There
Franken's
it is.
The only
Franken's
lefty.
The one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Franken is the answer. All right. So let's do a quick streaming check-in. Squid Game still continues to dominate on the originals charts, but
probably had a little bit of a Chrissy Teigen boost. Am I right? A little TT, yeah. Tease some tips. Yeah.
Because of that sick ass party.
Yeah.
I that wish party I was sick. There. Damn. Mm-hmm. That shit looked tight.
Also, Jesse Ventura, I think, was like Green Party or something. He's not fully Republican because he's always like 9/11 was done by goblins, you know, and you're like, okay, right. Full, like, yeah. I feel so like, you're like, ah.
I feel like maybe libertarian or am I?
Yeah. Like,
maybe I just associate Green Party. Him with that. Green Party.
Oh, really?
Okay. He was okay. Independence Party from 2000, 2003, Reform Party from 98 to 2000. He was an independent before 98 and then from 2003 to 2020. I think all that to say, opportunistic weirdo.
Right. Was he leftist? Am I just like, because I was such a fucking, like, just ate everything that the mainstream media told me? Like, is that why I think he was?
I don't ever remember him being portrayed as lefty.
Right.
No, not really. But I mean, I think maybe because he would be like, the Bush administration is out of control. Right. And you're like, oh, okay. And he's like, right. I would be even more efficient. You're like, oh.
It's contextual. I guess you're right. There's way crazier people now. I mean, he's no like cinema or something.
No. But I mean, he, for the most part, he said like his like quote was like, George W. Bush was the worst president of my lifetime.
Yeah.
So I was like, well that's
true.
That's facts.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's,
I mean,
objectively
to
true.
That point.
Yeah. And then when Piers Morgan asked him about 9/11, he said, my theory of 9/11 is that we certainly, at the best, we knew it was going to happen. They allowed it to happen to further their agenda in the Middle East and to go to these wars.
All right.
I would say that's not the very least, but that's a plausible possibility, I guess.
Yeah. But I know, again, I'm sure Zai King will tell us, and he's like, no, check out this hot take on Breonna Taylor. And you're like, oh,
uh-oh.
I don't know. But all that to say, I don't know enough, and I don't care enough.
So Netflix is monitoring streaming these days, and they're telling us, you know, what people are actually watching. Netflix dominating the originals. It's basically all Netflix except for Only Murders in the Building and Ted Lasso. Everything else in the top 10 is Netflix.
Mm.
But on the acquired front, acquired, which is like, you know, shows that they brought over that were not original programming, they are 100% of the top 10. But they also, like, so Shameless is number one, Cocomelon number two, In the Dark number three. I wasn't even like, that didn't jog anything for me.
Oh, yeah, it's The Blind Woman.
Got it. Okay. And Seinfeld's at number four, which Seinfeld, like, just dropped. I think they were, and the money they spent on that, they were expecting that to be like a Friends / The Office style like phenomenon.
I think they forget that those are escapism shows, and that is not.
Oh, Seinfeld's like too
Seinfeld
real.
Seinfeld is, yeah. Seinfeld is like the world is terrible and people are selfish, and like let's laugh at it. People are not ready for that.
Right,
right.
They're like, we want hugs. What's a show that's hugs? Oh, Ted Lasso. Thank you.
I want to live in New York and jobs don't matter. Friends.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to worry about whether Ross and Rachel are going to end up together. I don't want to, you know, worry about whether I see a lot of these selfish tendencies in myself. I mean, I think hilarious, but that's why I think Curb is like its own little world, because not everybody likes that. If it makes you like upset and nervous when that kind of stuff happens, then it's not the show for you. Whereas Friends is so much more, and The Office so much more easily like calming.
Yeah. And I feel like
comfort food
with Seinfeld, there's more, it was like more influential. First of all, it like got, it was more original at the time that it came out. And then now, like, I feel like it's influenced, first of all, obviously Curb is like just a spiritual successor that like does a lot of the things Seinfeld did, but like in a more pure form. But also I just feel like it was like Seinfeld was probably more influential on like the comedy writers of the world than like Friends or The Office. And so now, like in the same way that like Belushi was great and super original, but never really like translated to later generations because he was like so influential on like Farley and like a lot of those people, that like I feel like people didn't really get it as much. Like I wonder if Seinfeld has more thoroughly like infiltrated the culture to the point that now it feels like an earlier version of something that we've already seen like executed super well with like Arrested Development and, you know, shows like that that are uber despicable people. But like that's the whole joke.
I like that theory.
There's something, I don't know. I think, yeah, like your point about Seinfeld being like a comedy, like for comedy people, like it's pretty, they're like, yo, man, there's these Seinfeld things that are like my favorite pieces of comedy or whatever. And you understand, like so many writers do talk about the way Seinfeld was written and like their whole writing style, especially of like making scenes of like stuffing the sausage, as they called it, of like just taking the dumbest premise and just cramming as much drama into the stupidest nothing you can do to make that just explode with overemphasis. And like that was sort of like the engine of it.
And it's also very like improv derived. Like it's pretty much every episode is a herald, because like, which is like that, the long form. I'm so sorry, everyone. Long form.
Hey, it's been a minute since I've been at UCB.
Yeah. But, you know, it's where they said the tent poles fought far apart. And then in the end, they come together in ways that are unexpected. So, you know, that was like a classic thing. The thing that they had mentioned about the one thing is going to come back always at the end and be the thing that fucks this other thing up. And I think the way that they did that consistently every episode was like pretty
remarkable. Yeah, and if you're aspiring, right, I think for, you know, kids that grew up in the 90s, you're like, look back, and you're like, damn, like, this is really, like, people want to emulate that. And I feel like maybe because of that influence, like you're saying, it's coming back around again.
Yeah.
For, like, you know, just people to recapture their love of it, or younger people being like, oh, it's this chooky shit, all the old people talking about Seinfeld. And then it's like, what are you doing? What are my jokes?
All right, this is my final point. Seinfeld himself, I don't know, man, going in the same direction many older comics who like don't understand why people don't like them anymore,
right?
Like old ass old man takes,
right?
Very specific to the 90s with just his like style and
a lot of bitching
politics
about why people don't want to hear about Serial again.
right yeah. And, you know, like this NPR article about like why it might not hit quite as hard as Friends makes the point about Michael Richards, which obviously like his, you know, racist screed on stage makes his performance harder to enjoy. But I also think like I think
we're giving America way too much credit. Are you fucking kidding
me?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. That's what's ruining it for people. Oh, no, he was racist one time. Yeah. Okay, Woody Allen and shit gets to make movies. Mel Gibson out here saying, I hope he get raped by a bunch of N-words.
Hey, Louis and Dave Chappelle's got a Grammy nomination.
Hey!
You can't touch me. Yeah. Don't cancel me!
That's my recently? New phone ringer.
Don't cancel me! You can't cancel me! The show is already... We didn't cancel it! We decided to end it on our own! I've never been canceled! He's, I mean, someone recently was talking... His name was in the headlines again because another comedy was like, I don't care for him much because of his proclivity for younger women back in the day.
Yeah, he dated a dated, dude, in quotes. That's what it was called at the time. A high school student.
Not statutory rape?
Yeah. It was he
hey, whoa,
publicly
whoa.
Dated a like high school student.
Yeah, and they were like, look how fun. He's picking up his girlfriend at her school or whatever. Yeah. And you're like,
bring her to a
Christ.
Knicks game.
Like, he's grooming a minor before everyone's eyes, but because he has like a kind of a mullet, everyone's cool.
And then everyone was like, well, it makes sense. She has big titties. I was like, do you hear yourself?
Right.
Yeah. What do you mean? Like, my hearing's bad? Yeah. She has big titties.
I'm sorry.
Those
did you not hear me?
Say she's an adult.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, Seinfeld, he's laughing on his gigantic piles of cash.
Yeah.
And I think Steve Bannon, too, that we get Steve Bannon because of Seinfeld also.
Oh yeah, what was that story again?
Wait,
he was
what?
Because of the publisher
he was
or
like,
something?
Yeah, like one of the production companies that like sold the rights to it. He had a stake in it, so he got a piece of like this huge payout,
right,
for like the like when it went to syndication, like mass syndication. There was like some so he became very wealthy from his associate from his failed Hollywood career.
Yeah.
And that gave him a lot of money, and who knows where we'd be if that didn't happen. But either way, America's gonna America, with or without Steve Bannon.
Yeah. As bad as the Michael Richards take that, like, people aren't watching it because of the racism, NPR also has the take that it's set in a shockingly white New York City, and that's why people aren't enjoying it. Because Friends...
I know, they're like,
Yeah, have you seen Friends? Aisha Tyler holds down that entire show for the entirety of time as the only black person.
Yeah.
Simpler times.
Yeah.
Because, like, did he ever date a person of color, woman of color on this show?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No. Yeah. Jerry? No, he would never.
He would never.
Do you remember there's that one episode where Elaine thinks that the guy she's dating is a person of color and she just doesn't know what? And that guy thinks she is too. And then when they both find out that they're white, they're very disappointed and they're like, what do you want to do? And goes, all right, I don't know, let's go to the Gap. Which
right.
is the only time they address the race thing ever.
The one that ages so well, the cigar store Indian episode.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That's great. And then I'm trying to think of anything else that made super.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, there's plenty of.
What about all the transphobic stuff? Friends was like.
Oh, yeah. Because Chandler's. Was it Chandler's mom? And they're like.
Chandler's mom.
Yeah. It's like, he's a cross dresser. And you're like, oh, and he like hated his mom. I remember it's so funny you say that.
Well, the punchlines were always like, I'm fucked up. And the reason I can't have intimacy is it turns out my dad was fucking my piano teacher and he's a girl. That was like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Brought to you by the same people who wrote the Cheers theme song that has that weird line in it.
Yeah.
Wait, what line?
There's like, and you're like, what is it? There's a
it's,
line.
It's
like,
the long version, like the verse that wasn't on the TV show.
Okay.
But...
I was like, have I missed something from the Everybody Knows Your Name part?
Yeah, there was a.
If you're white, that's the part they cut.
Where is it? It's like something real, like a woman being a man or something like that. And that being like a point of stress. That's why I got to go to Cheers. With Friends, I just didn't watch it for the reasons I was like, well, I don't see myself in this show, so I'm going to keep watching Wayne's Brothers or Jamie Foxx show or something like that. I remember, like, Her Majesty, she'd be like, when we were first dating, she's like, oh, you don't watch Friends? I'm like, nah. And she was watching in the background once, and I came in. It was one of those episodes where Kathleen Turner is playing Chandler's mom, and I was like, what's going on? And like, and then I was just watching them just talk about it. And I'm like, yo, this is fucked up. Like, what is this? She's like, yeah, this doesn't age well at all. And I'm like, wow.
No.
Okay. But look, all shows have, it's wild to watch a lot of stuff. I recently started watching things that were sort of like formative for me, like sitcoms, just to kind of like understand like how much, I can't believe how much The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air like formed my entire like mental scape.
Same.
But there's also like ones with like you also like watch Jamie Foxx show and you're like, okay, bro, like you are you are not about consent at all.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And it's just a fucking punchline the whole time. And you're like, just you start watching these things. And you're like, wow, these are very subtle things that we were taking in.
But
very,
also, we were so brainwashed that entire time for on the Jamie Foxx show. We were cheering for Jamie Foxx, who just would not leave this fucking poor woman alone and like just ruined her life by sexually harassing her at work. constantly.
Fancy. But then
they're like, no. And then she wore her down and it works out.
Hey, fellas, you get it. Wear them down. Oh, that's the word. Your husband wants to be a girl. That's the one.
Yeah. It's roll out of bed. Mr. Coffee's dead. The morning's looking bright. And your shrink ran off to Europe and didn't even write. And your husband wants to be a girl. It doesn't even like really work in the thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't even make sense. Rhyming scheme. It just sounds like the writer was trying to work out a personal problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, well,
went on to write on Friends.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
The $100 wedding dress that just saved Abercrombie?
Or the tech acquisition that was just like Game of Thrones?
Or the one financial equation that can solve climate change?
Then check out our daily podcast, The Best One Yet, or as we call it, T-Boy.
This is Nick.
This is Jack.
And we pick the three most interesting business news stories every day for the perfect mix.
20 minutes each morning, you're going to feel brighter.
We call it pop biz, don't we, Jack?
Where pop culture meets business news. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies,
or you're going for that promotion at work,
or you just want to know the trends before your friends,
feel brighter by starting your morning with us every weekday.
Listen to The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your pods.
You can listen to The Best One Yet ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts.
With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, and many more, Wondery means business.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.